Bienvenidos. That's California for welcome to the March 28th edition of National Review's Radio Free California podcast. I'm Will Swaim, president of the California Policy Center. You can find my colleagues and me at californiapolicycenter.org. You can find my friend and co-host David Bonson right here. He's an economist and author, the host of the Capital Record podcast, and the founder of the eponymous investment firm, the Bonson Group. Hello, David.
Will, how are you?
I'm good, all things considered. I want to talk to you about a couple of things that aren't necessarily California-centric, and I hope listeners will forgive us. But just as we were warming up the microphones here and Lucas gave us the thumbs up to go, thank you, Lucas.
Hey, you're about to talk about something serious, so I want to say something not serious before you do.
Oh, please do.
This thing about us having to get like permission from listeners to talk about what we want to, it's not going to happen. Like, you got to stop apologizing for this. We talk about whatever we want.
When the left talks about a permission structure, you're not talking.
I'm just saying it's our podcast. Yeah. I mean, we talk primarily about California politics.
Yeah.
The whole point is that, in a sense, everything out of California ends up leaking over in other places. We do get emails, or at least I do, from people all the time saying they're not from California, but they like our podcast.
Yeah.
So just whatever. We'll talk about what we want.
All right. To our friends in Uganda, then.
And Kamala Harris has not been a senator or the attorney general in California for years, and we talk about her all the time.
All the time. In fact, I just scratched her from the run list, and I hope listeners will forgive us for that, but I do want to talk about...
Will hopes that you will forgive us. I don't care what you do.
I was raised Catholic.
I know, but they don't have to forgive us. They just... Most of these people like us. If they don't, they don't.
I got it. So,
I hope you'll forgive me for saying I don't care if you forgive us.
Wow, how do I climb down from that now?
No, but it's a serious deal, this Nashville thing you're about to bring up.
Yeah. God, well, you go ahead.
Well, look, my understanding is that the school was not, and I could be wrong on this, that the school was not formally connected to the PCA, Presbyterian Church of America denomination, but that they rented space from a PCA church. And if I'm wrong, I apologize. That was my first read of things, but that denomination is the denomination that I have formerly been a part of, just meaning one of the churches I've attended for many years was a member of, was in that same denomination. And I'd say about, 100 pastors in that denomination around the country are people I've known my whole life for a long time.
Is this through your dad ultimately?
Some of it was, and some of it since he died, and other relationships, connections. There's boards and activities and things I've supported, been a part of. It's just a small world. This little reformed evangelical Christian world is not big. And this was a Presbyterian church that had a Christian school there on campus. And one of the I have an office in Nashville, Tennessee. One of my employees there knew one of the teachers, not one who was harmed, thank God. But nevertheless, no matter where it is and who it is, whether you know people through various degrees of separation or not, the whole thing is obviously every time just awful. But this was a real bizarre one in terms of what ended up, how it all ended up, who the culprit ended up being. But I was telling you before we went on air, if any of you listeners have not seen the video that was just released this morning of the cops' body cam footage of them finally, pulling their people together, guns together, and moving forward, knocking down doors, going step by step, and basically ending this thing, and then quite literally ending this person's life, it's one of the most haunting and gripping things I've ever seen. And all I was overcome with was, a gratitude for these guys' heroism. It's a heroism that wasn't there.
That's right.
At the Parkland shooting.
That's right.
It is. I'm sorry. It's just a fact.
Yeah.
The cops, security guards refused to go in.
That's right.
And these guys went in with guns
blazing. And we saw this in Uvalde too.
And you sometimes, as a hero, you have to run to the sound of gunfire. And that's what these people did. And then the justice was served.
For a moment, I'm going to be petty, and I just want to point out, you have not seen the rush to pathologize this from the mainstream media.
No.
Except in terms of guns, right?
Or maybe this is not picking to some degree because it's pretty radical people doing it.
Right.
But some would actually say the pathology is there, that they're saying the way which Christians treat transgender people.
Yes, they
would call it, like, an innocent 6-year-old kid caused a transgender person to shoot her. What the? is wrong with these people? Yeah. Dear God.
Well, yeah, I am, as some of our listeners know, I listen every morning after I've done my usual, and I'll spare you the details.
Devotion?
Prayer and meditation.
Good.
Right. I do. I start to make coffee, and I turn on the National Public Radio to get their take on the headlines, and I swear to you, if this had been a white man in a black church, we would know instantly his name, how he was connected to Republicans. You would see that immediately. You know, why are men bad? Why are white men especially bad? Why are white conservative men the worst? And we have to fear, fear, fear. But NPR has refused ever once to identify her as a transgender woman, at least to this point. They have so far described her as, I'm sorry, they did this morning in a late breaking piece describe her as a woman who used the pronouns he and him. And then so throughout this entire newscast, they were talking about this woman who did the shooting, a transgender woman, as him. Or just as the shooter. Now, part of this is also, I think...
First of all, CNN referred to the shooter as a female 5 different times.
Mm.
And there are all kinds of people saying, hey, this tragedy is already sad, but let's not commit the second tragedy of misgendering.
Yeah.
This was a woman.
Yeah.
This was a woman. And for NPR to now say, well... She used the pronouns he and him or whatever. I'm not one of these people. It's a bad issue. The transgender moment in the culture is really frightening in a lot of ways, but it's not the one I spend most of my time thinking about it, because I really do believe that it is so disproportionate in the society relative to the attention the media gets it, and that's the left's agenda, not ours. And yet, you know, there's the stuff with children and forced transitions, and there's stuff going on that's awful, awful, awful. But I guess there's just so many different things that animate me all the time. It's not one that on a daily basis I'm thinking about. But one thing I will say, it's not insensitive. It's not wrong. We've joked before about how we go about talking about Caitlyn and what pronouns. This thing of like, it's a woman and they went by the pronoun. So like, where is the limiting principle on this? This person is X, and they refer to themselves as a stuffed animal.
Or Napoleon Bonaparte.
Or a rhino.
Yeah.
Like, is that a necessary anecdote in the media of someone schizophrenic? Can we say, by the way, they believe that they were? Like, I don't see anyone saying, David, all the Waco stuff on the 30-year anniversary of that debacle. Right. I watched that documentary the other night. Let's come to that later.
Yeah, okay.
And David Koresh, but no one would say like, David Koresh, who by the way, identified as Jesus Christ, did this, this, and this. Like, it just kind of like he's a lunatic. And Now, I have my own opinions about what transgenderism really is. I also have very strong opinions about what the nature of reality is. And for those of you who listen to this podcast a bit, you know I do root my beliefs in the nature of reality in creational truth. I think they're objective. And I don't really much care for people messing around with it. I don't think it leads to good things. In this case, let's get back to the tragedy. You're understating your point. That the media would be all over the identity nature of the story if it were any number of different things. Obviously, the white person shooting at the black church is the most common.
Yes.
And by the way, that should be mentioned.
I totally agree.
No problem.
Yeah.
Some racist lunatic does something, let's say it for what it is.
Yes.
But in this case, just stop with the pretending.
Right.
I cannot even believe that they expect us to take them seriously when they can't even cover the senseless murder of children without politically correct gendering nonsense.
Yeah.
Stop
three,
it.
Just so we have the facts straight. Not six, but 6-year-olds, but 9-year-olds, same diff. Three of them, three people in their 60s, so roughly the age of yours truly.
So it's three children, three adults.
Three children, three adults. Yeah. The kids are 9, each of them. And I am so horrified. I remember reading it on my phone, walked from my office at home to my wife, who was working away in her little office, and I said, what do you do? She said, oh God, I think that's it. We pray to God. That's it. We just pray. Like, seriously, I know the left hates this, and I'm so sorry, but the best I can offer right now is just prayer. I just can't imagine for the families, the community, what the loss is. We've seen this multiple
times. On a policy front, like, I don't want to go down the gun control stuff. You know, they'll do all that. They always do. It's not, it says, whatever. But I do have a question. I've brought up in the past, and I've discussed with other friends, this idea about a lot of unemployed veterans we have in our country and why we can't find retired military people to go serve as security posts at different schools. But then yesterday I heard Nikki Haley is running for president, former governor of South Carolina. I like Nikki. I know a lot of people don't. She's not going to be president, but she's a pretty, you know, ambitious politician and whatever. Like, oh, wow.
Yeah, what a shock, right?
I never heard of that. But she made a comment, we need to have a police officer at every school.
A cop in every
school.
Yeah.
And at first I was like, oh, yeah, it's similar to my idea about the military thing. And then I stopped and I said, wait a second, why don't we? We have enough cops.
Yeah.
And people are constantly, I do think there are some cops that like sometimes need stuff to do, right? Like they're not every single city, there's constantly crime fighting going on. Like there's moments of respite. So why not use in the flow of public service, in the job description, that there will be cops that cover schools?
Yeah.
I guess I can't think of a reason not to do it. I don't believe the costs are going to be extraordinary. If we had to go out, I don't know how many schools there are, K through 12, but it's, you know, a gazillion, and we had to hire 1 to 2 ex-military people and train and get ready and all that stuff, you know, you're probably talking about billions of dollars to stand that up. But I'm not sure what the cost would be to just sort of have a rotating shift of a already existing cop that's going to go front a school.
When this happened a few years ago, I remember our local, you know, the school our children attended asked if adults would come and just like be present. And they checked us out. And we did. We stood around the school. There was a rash of school shootings. It might have been around Parkland. I'm blanking. It was while we're doing the podcast. And so I took my shift for, you know, 3 times a week, standing out on an open area of the playground to make sure that the perimeter was secure. That's it. I wasn't armed. I'm not trained. I just have eyeballs and a cell phone. And that was my job. And, you know, it was little, but it was as much as we could do. And it made people feel better. You know, is that the most effective response? Voluntarism? I don't know, but I certainly felt...
But I mean, I think it's got to be armed voluntarism.
Oh, I think there has to be that element. I'm just saying that even a person like me who has no training in weapons, I'm not a mixed martial arts guy. I've just got
eyeballs. That's where you and I are different, Will. I'm just going to stand out there, and whether I have a gun or not, no one's going to mess with this.
I got it. Hey, I don't know.
I will literally talk to them about monitorism until they run in fear. I will do to them what I do to my family.
I would run toward that fire if I were the bad guy. I would run toward you and engage. Listen. So, hey, I don't know how to, what was it Kafka said, lift ourselves out of this corner we
Let's
painted ourselves into.
Let's move to the happier story of San Diego.
Yeah. So, did you see this coming? Here's the headline. San Diego State University has made the Final Four. First time a Mountain West Division team has made it this far.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, and a lot of controversy because in the last, like, under 2 seconds, a foul is called against the Creighton Owls. Creighton, this other just remarkable but perennial participant in March Madness, Creighton is.
Yeah, not in the Final Four, though.
No.
Like, no matter what, because of all the upsets of all these number one and number two seeds losing, there was going to be a great story of someone going to the Final Four. But anyways.
Well, as I watched this final play, and I have friends who went to Creighton. It's a remarkably small liberal arts Catholic school out in Nebraska, in Omaha.
Catholic or Catholic?
It was founded by Catholics, and lots of Catholics go there. I can't say anything. I can't speak to the curriculum. But I will say it's nominally Catholic. And so the Creighton Owls versus the San Diego State University Aztecs. And in that final fewer than 2 seconds, 1.2 or something, I got a ref, you know, suddenly blows a whistle on a call that looks to me very tic-tacky. And I just want to say for people who are listening and hate sports, we'll come to a political point, as I always do. I'm so sorry. But there's a grab, right? There's the defender gets a fistful of the guy's jersey, leans on him a little bit on his hip, and the guy goes up and misses a shot. Ref calls it. The San Diego State University player, the guy's name is Darian Trammell. gets, you know, two at the free throw line, misses the first. I mean, this is getting really dramatic now.
I kind of thought he'd miss the second at that point because of Justice, because it was such a horrifically bad call.
That's what I want to hear you. He scores. They win by 1 point. Yeah. There's no time left.
What,
so go
what
ahead.
Made it even worse, by the way, is that technically there was still a little bit of time left.
Right.
So then Creighton throws a full-length pass, and then it kind of tips someone's hand. And if it had tipped the other, if it had tipped San Diego State's hand, now Creighton has like point something seconds under their own basket, and there's still another possibility, but they ruled that the time had gone out and it didn't tip his hand, and you know that took him like 8 more minutes to reveal. No one wants to hear us do a long sports thing. The only thing I'll say is I'm very happy for any of you listening or San Diego State fans. I don't really care either way about San Diego State. I most alumni don't. One of my best friends, the best man at my wedding, is a graduate of San Diego State, and he texted and said, "Is Marshall Faulk playing?" You know, meaning the most famous San Diego State player of all time, played football at San Diego State over 30 years ago, became an NFL Hall of Famer. That, you know, they're not, the San Diego State alumni base is not exactly like the way we are about SC football, you know, like where they care about it for the rest of their lives. But this is a really good basketball team, and they beat, did they beat Alabama or Houston?
Oh, gosh. Sorry.
You know, they had a massive win to get to the Elite Eight game on the Friday night before. And so all I could say, Will, is it wasn't a foul. And I'm not saying it's unfair to Creighton, which it isn't, but it wasn't fair to San Diego State. Because without that call, they're going to go to overtime. And for all we know, San Diego State's still going to win. But now they have to win under this shade of controversy. Right. And the ref should... It was just a ridiculously dumb call.
Can I geek out for one more moment and say that one of the things that intrigued me as I read lots of analysis about this is that San Diego State's coach, don't know the guy's name, so sorry, made this really sensible decision to almost go with like a hockey program, you know, where you're doing live shifts on the fly. Both teams ultimately played 9 players. Here's the difference. San Diego State's players averaged no fewer than 14 minutes, these 9 players. The player on the court the least amount of time played about 14 minutes, something like that. And I want to say that what's fascinating about this is that you had fresh wheels deep into the March Madness. You'll know this better than I. But this is a rigorous schedule. This is like an NBA playoff schedule where you were just playing back-to-back heroic games. And the San Diego State guy, the coach there, really used fresh wheels deep into this tournament. Whereas the Creighton guys' bench really did not play an awful lot and took collectively, his bench took collectively one shot off the bench.
Yeah.
Not good. So I think a part of this also might just be that as the Aztecs had a, you know, the livelier crew on the team on the floor. Although this guy, Trammell, was apparently like, you know, played more minutes than anybody else in the team. So anyway, there's that. But I also just want to take a moment, consider this our John Sutter moment. It has nothing to do with John Sutter. But the San Diego State University program, their mascot, whom they no longer call a mascot even.
The Aztecs.
This has been since your childhood and my almost middle age has been an issue in San Diego State, the San Diego State University community, among small, I'm just going to say, vociferous minority groups. And I don't mean minority racially. I just mean like small.
Because they're bigger fans of the Mayans? Or
no, they are really upset that the Aztec.
They hate Indians?
No, it's quite the opposite. These are mostly groups that
they
claim.
They hate South Americans?
You are so close. They hate any use. This goes back to sort of like, you know, do you name your team the Cleveland Indians or the Braves or the Kansas City Chiefs?
Isn't that resolved?
If
you mean it because you hate them, then don't do it.
Don't do
and
it.
If you mean it because you like them, then do it.
Yes.
How'd I do?
You were perfect. That is the nomenclatural process these days. And I think it's completely reasonable. Although I will say that the Fighting Irish still go along with a very sort of feisty image of what it means to be Irish. You're tiny, you're red-haired.
You think it should just be the drunk Irish?
I'm so glad I wasn't drinking coffee.
So this controversy doesn't, you don't take it seriously, do you?
I do in this sense that
you said it's been since I was a child, and I've never heard one single person ever in my entire life say anything about the San Diego State Aztecs.
That's because you hate the California State University system.
No, I know that general high level controversy, But like, just similar with the Washington Redskins, this was always, remember, this was Bill Clinton's lawyer, who Lanny Davis, who was the big attorney for the Redskins, arguing for their ability to keep the name, and the time and time and time again to go to court with depositions and statements from Indian tribal leaders saying, this doesn't bother us, we don't care, whatever. But that, again, the analogy I use is the Lakers. If calling San Diego State Aztecs is a derogatory to the Aztecs, I want to know why the environmentalists aren't mad at the Lakers. Like, oh, they're just coming in saying all kinds of bad things about the lakes. They just want to destroy the lakes. They hate lakes.
Let me go over the history. They now call it the Aztec identity, which tells you something. And that only occurs in 2018. But the team's name goes back to 1925. After nearly three decades, I'm just reading from the university's website, and I'll put this in show notes. They had unofficial nicknames, including, and I love these, the Professors and the Wampus Cats. Mm. Good God, if we could only have the Wampus Cats deep into the March Madness. But they chose Aztec as a way to honor a ferocious warrior tribal group that took over Mesoamerica, you know, centuries ago, right? Sometime, I believe, in the 1300s, 1200s, something like that. And for anybody who doesn't know about Aztecs, yes, famously all about, it was a death cult. It was really about cannibalism. It was about the, I mean, if you hate imperialism, you hate the Aztecs. But that's not why the current group, the current crowd reviles the name. They revile the name because they think it diminishes the accomplishments of indigenous people. So anyway, 1925 is when we get the name. They get a,
this is a straight up Babylon Bee piece.
I swear to you,
I'm looking right at it.
It really feels that. Yeah.
Can you put this one in the show notes?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
This is from the office of the president.
The office of the
president. Of a school that receives billions of dollars from the taxpayers.
That's right.
And they appointed a task force?
That's right. Yeah, that comes later. So they have an Aztec character known as Monty Montezuma, and the guy, it says, you know, here on the president.
Does Knott's Berry Farm still have Montezuma's Revenge, or did they rename that?
They renamed it? Oh, it's still there. Lucas, the young man in the studio here, says, and our producer this episode, says, yes, still Montezuma's Revenge. You know, so...
This is the
costume has been made historically more accurate. Like, you know, okay, so that's important. But you get in 2000, the Associated...
1941, they did a student portraying an Aztec at a football game. That's this Monty Montezuma.
That's right.
You know what they did? They took advantage of America being distracted by the war effort.
To sneak in
a little...
That's right.
Yeah. 1941, yeah. That's not a coincidence.
No, Pearl Harbor, yeah.
And so then people are all focused on things like the Nazis and the Japanese, and they don't even notice.
We don't see this coming.
The latent racism going on right here.
Unbelievable.
With Monty Montezuma.
But the most recent controversies go back to, this only shows it in 2000, but I remember quite clearly being at San Diego State in the 90s and seeing these kinds of demonstrations at their games. I went to a football game down there, I don't know, 94, perhaps 93. It was a small crowd of students yelling about how, you know, racist this imagery was. And just to be clear, here's what the image is. It's a guy dressed up like what you might imagine an Aztec nobleman looked like. You know, he's a warrior carrying a spear and he's dressed in, you know, sort of Aztec regalia, like an eagle mask and that kind of thing.
You got to read these. You got to read the bullet points.
All right.
Of 2000.
Here we go. 2000. Associated Students University Council passes a resolution backed by the Native American Student Alliance that calls for retiring the Aztec moniker and Montezuma mascot because they are racist and culturally insensitive. The University Council puts the issue to a student vote. What do the students say, David?
They want to keep the Aztec moniker and the racist mascot.
So the University Senate, comprising faculty and staff, votes to also retain the moniker, but they want to retire the mascot.
Which is always what you do with abject racism, is you got to split the baby.
Split the baby in half, the
you
racist
just,
baby.
Just like, we're going to keep half of the racism and
That's
get rid
right.
of the other half.
The University Senate, that's what they do. The Alumni Association Board, I love this. The alumni, what do they do? Their board, they vote to support both moniker and mascot.
Can we just point out that this is leadership at its finest?
True leadership.
When you are stuck with a brutally difficult decision, stuff that lives are hanging in the balance.
That's right.
As to what your the costume your football mascot is going to wear on a Saturday. You first start with the Associated Students University Council. Then you put it to a university council vote, a student vote. You go to the university senate, get the faculty and staff input, then go to the alumni association board. So you don't punt to one bureaucratic body. You punt to like four different bureaucratic bodies rather than just say, shut up. Monty stays.
That's right.
Now, by the way, Monty Montezuma, I'd like to, I'm pretty sure my brother dated a girl once named Monty Montezuma. I could be wrong. Anyways, so then student.
So then, yes.
Not the student body president, the real president.
The real president, Stephen Webb.
How does he solve for the ambiguity from.
I so love this moment, David, and I know this is
four different task forces, that's basically, right. Yeah. Bureaucratic bodies.
That's right.
Say different things. So then he goes, well, we're going to have to appoint a task force.
That's right. We need to study this. So a year later, the task force comes back with updated logos.
Whoa. 1 year later?
1 year later.
How did they have time?
I don't know.
This has been going on for 75 years. They only take 1 year?
They take 1 year.
How much research can you do on Montezuma in 1 year?
Task force recommends updating logos and symbols to be culturally appropriate and historically accurate.
Mm.
Oh, dear God. Historical accuracy in the representation of Aztecs would require ascending a massive pyramid, opening up the chest cavities of your victims while they are still alive, eating their beating hearts, and then tossing the corpse down into a pile of corpses.
While this task force was going on, I'd like a study done on the general English proficiency of some of the graduates.
Yeah. Yeah, wouldn't you?
Math and English.
Right.
Kinda. So they ended up deciding, let's drop the name.
Yeah.
The costume should be accurate.
That's right.
And the character should have a regal bearing.
Regal bearing. Must have a regal. So, you know.
That sounds kind of imperialistic.
It really does. Very. In fact, and you'll know that it's imperialistic because one of the groups, like I'm just
this is the best line. You got to read the next 2002. All
right. 2002 ambassador. Now they call this guy not a mascot but an ambassador, right? Ambassador Montezuma.
So like when you're on a task force in president of school, have you never been around college kids?
Yeah, I have.
You just they don't know that what they're walking into.
No, they have no idea.
Like they would have been better off just literally having some dude at a frat party doing shots of tequila, taking a picture. They go with Ambassador Montezuma.
Ambassador Montezuma.
So they're just trying to get made fun of.
Yeah, they really are. And here's what's so much fun for me. We get down to 2003. Associated Students approves a resolution from the Native American Student Alliance and the Movimiento Estudiante.
Wait, what's this Aztec Warrior Foundation? Is that some kind of a supremacist group?
This is a...
is that a hate group?
They oppose the Aztec warrior
representation graphic reasons, though.
That's right, only for graphic reasons. And they want to have non-human mascots. So they bring in very briefly by 2010. They bring in Zuma.
The non-human thing, by the way, back to my Laker point.
Bingo! Like, where is PETA on this? Yeah. Because they actually had an actual jaguar. Now, this is San Diego, for those who don't know, who are outside of California.
I actually like that, because it's totally non-controversial. No more human anything.
That's right.
The San Diego land.
Yeah, yeah.
We're playing the Los Angeles Lakes, and then hopefully we're going to bring in the Baltimore cities. Just go completely, like, no personification whatsoever.
So so San Diego State brings in this jaguar.
Zuma.
They bring in an actual. This reminds me at this point of a Will Ferrell movie.
I gotta quit reading ahead. This is killing me.
It's a Will Ferrell moment.
It
here.
Is.
They bring in an actual live jaguar on a
jaguar
leash.
Mascot named Zuma.
Zuma.
Which for some of you who graduated San Diego State in the '90s, that's not to be confused with Zima. Which I think some of you have some regrets over.
Yeah. So, but the jaguar goes away in 2012. It just says here that he was retired. I don't know if retired means he was taken out back and shot or released in the nearby wild animal park or the San Diego
Zoo.
Well,
it looks like whatever happened, it kind of caused things to settle down for a bit until the Queer People of Color Collective.
Yes.
So this was the group in 2014, the Queer People of Color Collective, backed a resolution to abolish the use of the word Aztec.
That's right.
And the Aztec warrior, but then the Associated Student University Council rejected it. So does anyone notice a theme here?
Mm-hmm.
Time and time again, you have either an utterly extreme, deranged group or career bureaucrats asking for something that time and time and time again, the stakeholders, the students of the darn school,
and the alumni
keep keep either past or present students
right.
just laughing. They're like, stop it.
Yeah.
Just stop
this. They get the idiocy. So 2017, they reject another resolution. The Associated Students University Council rejects a resolution to retire the moniker and the warrior again. The University Senate votes to end all human representation of an Aztec and to stop representing the culture with spears or weapons that connote barbaric representations of the Aztec culture. Because, of course, Aztecs, well-known humanitarians. Just I cannot say enough
about what would you think about solving this once and for all? With the Aztecs dressed in the way that they were dressed,
right.
but with AK-47s.
Oh, I like it. To update it a little bit.
Would that be? Well, it's less barbaric.
It is, yes.
Oh, but don't worry. They didn't just kind of come in and talk about getting rid of it. They also passed a resolution to form a new task force.
That's right. Got a new task force. 2018, SDSU President Sally Rausch appoints a 17-member Aztec Identity Task Force comprising students, faculty, staff, alumni, members at large.
That's the editor, Will Swaim, right
there. Yeah, sorry, I can't stop myself. In April of 2018, the Aztec Identity Task Force.
No, this isn't good enough for me.
You go.
Well, 17 members, faculty, staff, alumni, I'd like to know their... First of all, sexual orientation.
You got to
know. I'm not even gonna go to bullet point two.
You're not putting down
that one covered.
You're not putting down.
But
your
I'd also like to know what various genders are represented. All of the 66.
Are there any Aztecs?
How do you get properly diverse? There's 66 genders, right?
Is that what it is now?
I think it's up to 66 at the UC application. Uh-huh. They only have 17 members of the task force.
I doubt they represent.
So why don't we just basically lynch 49 people? Is what they're.
Yeah. I think this is really a call to lynch mob.
The task force came back.
They come back and they recommend that they
retain
the moniker, and they're divided on the Aztec warrior.
What's the difference?
Because they want the name Aztecs, but they do not want the visual. They don't want a guy dressed up, and it's always been a guy, as far as I know, dressed up like an Aztec nobleman with regal bearing.
So they want the name, but not the personification.
That's right.
Similar to how my wife wants a husband.
I think you're speaking pretty universally there. We seemed like a good idea when they started.
There's a concept here we're not willing to throw out altogether. But this guy.
Yeah, exactly. And so finally...
You know, that's Chris Rock's greatest line ever.
Tell me.
The number one issue that all men have to deal with throughout their adult life is knowing that they were not their wife's first choice.
Yeah. It's true.
It's so true.
All the things that my wife really adored about me in the beginning, I think a lot of those things have just like become real, at least minor irritations every single day. You're so smart becomes, I didn't ask for your explanation. So finally, in May of 2018, SDSU President Sally Rausch reports to the University Senate her decision. She will continue the use of the Aztec identity. Identity now, it's called, with a capital I, by the way. She also establishes a governing authority chaired by herself and all future presidents to ensure recognition of and reverence for the Aztec civilization.
As part of a daily life at San Diego State. And I think you know a lot of alumni at San Diego State. I don't know if you've ever been to a party down there like on Friday night. I've been to several back in the 90s.
Yep.
One thing I'll say about that student body, they care deeply. On a daily basis for reverence of the Aztec civilization.
That's right. Well, they party like it. I'll tell you. I went down there as a senior in high school. So we're talking about 1978. Travel back with me through the mists of time. And I am at this point thinking about going straight into seminary. That's what I want to do. My parents are saying, yeah, give it a breath. Take a beat. 1 year. They turned out to be so prescient. My dad's explanation later was, you were too into family to really go become celibate. It just wouldn't probably have worked for you. So they take me on a tour of, sort of major schools, UCLA, USC. They both went to SC, so they're kind of putting their thumb on the scale, and that's where I end up. But we go on a visit to San Diego State University, and we go into a dorm, which at that time seemed like from another planet for this little boy from South Orange County. And it was co-ed. And I will never forget, it was a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning. There had been parties in the dorm the night before. There were literal beer kegs, two of them, plural, in the bushes outside the dorm. And there were young women dressed in almost nothing, doing their laundry, just going about like, it's just dorm life, right? But as a 17-year-old boy contemplating a life in the priesthood, this was a revelation for me. And I can remember walking out of there and thinking like, yeah, maybe San Diego State's not a bad choice. It's not, you know, it's not a top-ranked school. It's not Stanford or Pomona, where I also wanted to go, or Berkeley. It's not USC. But, yeah, this looks pretty good. My parents said, as we climbed into my dad's Mustang and the doors went bang, bang, and we closed, and it was a two-door. They say, my dad looks in the rearview mirror at me and says, not a chance. Mm. He exercised a kind of parental patriarchal authority that I think is sadly diminished, perhaps. But and so thinking that I would appeal to my mom, I looked at her and she said, don't look at me. And that was it. No more San Diego State for me. So the Aztec identity back in 1978 was, I don't know. I doubt it's changed a whole lot. That is to say, the reverence for Aztec culture. I want to hear about their reverence for the most imperial group in Mesoamerica ever. I mean, these are people who took over local tribes in their area. They confiscated their water and their resources. They sacrificed victims from that, from the conquered tribes, down to the level of just kids.
So is your view that they should not be doing the Aztec thing because the Aztecs were bad people?
That's a part of it. Yeah.
See, I think that I have a different view.
I know you do.
Mine is... don't not do it because it's politically incorrect or it's appropriation or racially insensitive, and don't not do it because there were some bad people within that movement, you know, at the time. Do it because no one means any of that stuff, and we all know it.
Yeah,
they mean
true.
We're football and basketball players that want to go beat the other team.
Yes, that's all they mean.
And kind of scream and yell and rah while we do it.
Right.
Is this hard?
No, it's not, but I take it seriously.
I will not tolerate you playing for the Trojans until you can sit down and talk to me about the history of Troy, or even various Greek and, I mean, the Greco-Roman conflicts.
The Peloponnesian Wars.
Maybe we have people take a course in Victor Davis Hanson before they can have a mascot.
That's right.
I think there were probably some great Aztecs.
Oh, I'm sure there were.
And I think there was some ferocity throughout history that is unavoidable.
Right.
But no, I do not want to, back to my prior joke, do not want to make our mascots the cities, the lakes, the mountains.
Right.
Which, by the way, what are we going to do about the mountains? Because there's been volcanoes.
Mm.
There's been lakes where people
not
drown.
Represented. Not represented. Yeah.
I don't want those.
Where's
lakes
the Vanderbilt Vesuvians?
we're going to end up with what they actually did, where once again, real life is funnier than my own mockery. Mm. The year between the Washington Redskins and the Washington, what are they
Commanders.
Called? The Commanders?
Yeah.
What were they the year between?
The Washington team.
The Washington football team.
Football team, sorry. Yes.
And that's going to be the new mascot. Who's playing today? The Maryland basketball team is playing up the Duke basketball team.
Yeah. Okay. I don't like Duke. Duke sounds like royalty and aristocracy and
there
racism.
There was probably some of that, right?
Oh, I'm sure. But yeah, my only point is, to the extent that people want to take Aztec seriously as our progressive friends on the left, like the queer collective and the
queer people of color collective.
Thank you. And the movie Miento Estudiante, Chicanx, that's how you know they're truly Chicanos. They use and they believe in the Aztecs. They use two words, Chicano and an X at the end of it, that do not exist in anything like Nahuatl. That's the language spoken by the Aztecs. So my only point is, to the extent that I want to take these people seriously at all, I want to point out to them that, no, if you want to get rid of the name, get rid of it for the right reasons. It'd be like calling San Diego's basketball team the Nazis. That's how bad these people were 500 years ago, before the Spanish came in and with, I don't know, what, 35 guys or something, wiped out an entire imperial civilization.
This is just surreal.
It's disgusting.
So dumb.
Yeah. Okay. So
now that we've taken all of our podcast time to talk about the
Can you believe it? We really did.
I always feel bad for you because we only have like 10 more minutes and you do so much work. You have two headlines that we have covered, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 to go.
All
so
right.
By the way, Will only has 14 headlines today, which is about half of normal.
All right, I'm just going to skip through to what I take to be
which
some
ones?
Fun
do, let's do quick. Let's do a rapid
okay.
fire.
I want you to talk to me about the Wall Street Journal story, A Tale of Two Housing Markets. Prices fall in the West while the East booms. If you go deep into the comments in the Journal story, which will be linked in the show notes, you will find lots of people saying, see, liberals bad. But that's not what the story says. The story says in the East, and in fact, the East includes places like New York, which are doing really quite well, according to this story.
Oh, yeah, rents are huge. People are idiots. They just make stuff up. But by the way, the only thing I want to point out is that this story is using year-over-year data, not annualizing more recent monthly or quarterly data.
Mm-hmm.
And so January 2022 to January 2023 shows prices down, let's call it 10% in Seattle, San Francisco, San Jose. I can assure you Portland is not good. And it shows prices up, let's call it 10% in Miami, Orlando, even up in New York. The only thing I want to say is that I think the numbers are going to be worse in some cities. In if we were doing like a December of 23 versus December of 22, because the base effect is different, because prices were still rising in Q1 of 2022 and probably did not start going down in Q2 of 22. And so the year-over-year comparison is still to a number that was moving higher. But what you do know is that the home price appreciation nationally was 17.4% a year ago and now is 3%. So you had massive depreciation in the second half that hasn't yet caught into the year-over-year numbers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
But you're right. There's a political inconvenience in the data because it is showing Eastern cities seeing prices go higher and Western cities that go lower. And there is, on one hand, places like Seattle, San Francisco, San Jose, we know there are people that are leaving for quality of life issues.
Mm-hmm.
That's not political. It's a fact. It's
right.
Crime.
But it also seems linked to tech boom and bust, does it not?
It also is linked to taxes.
Yes.
You do have certain cities that are left-wing that are more tax-friendly than other states that are left-wing that are more tax-friendly than states that are, certain states are not. But then like Washington is a state tax-free zone, right? There's no state income tax in mm-hmm, Washington mm-hmm. and Seattle's down significantly, and that's really a quality of life issue. And as you say, tech related. You really do get a significant boom in house prices when you have a lot of new people having to come mm-hmm, in for mm-hmm. for jobs in a particular sector. That's gone the other way.
Right.
So it's hurting Silicon Valley. It's hurting Seattle, yeah. where Microsoft, Amazon, right. others are based.
Yeah, for a year, California's housing market was fueled by the aerospace industry. My family's a great example of that, where yeah. my dad worked in aerospace for his entire career.
Which is why, on the flip side of it, the 1989 to 91 period,
terrible.
People said house prices were collapsing in California, but they were not collapsing the rest of the country.
Right.
And that was a specific thing to the decline of the aerospace
That's right.
industry and kind of exacerbated through Clinton continuing to close more and more bases
That's right.
and whatnot.
Yeah.
So you're very right.
Okay. So we'll put that in the show notes. Then Scott Wiener tweets out a Fortune magazine story. Who knew? Scott Wiener reads Fortune, but maybe Fortune has changed because I don't subscribe.
Nobody reads
Fortune. Okay. So here's Scott Wiener's tweet. The narrative that California is imploding has never been true. They said everyone here was moving to Florida. Turns out, for every 6 Californians moving to Florida, 5 Floridians move to California. There's so much that's wrong in that line, but okay. They said Texas had lower taxes in California. Turns out that's false as well. Here's the Fortune magazine story that he's referring to, David. It's the headline is, Think Texas has a cheaper tax burden than California. Think again. So it says here, let's see, much was made of the so-called tech exodus from California to lower tax Texas during the COVID pandemic, but a new report finds it's not quite as good of a deal as many think. Blech, what a bleed. Though Texas has no state-level personal income tax, it does levy relatively high consumption and property taxes on residents to make up the difference, ultimately as a higher effective state and local tax rate. Says who? Says Wallet Hub. So, David, one of the things that I notice in this is that the formula that Wallet Hub used, and I just want to run this by you, has it that they used an average house cost of, I want to say it was $224,000. That was the housing cost they figured in to figure out tax base, $224,000. So my question would be for the people behind the Wallet Hub study, and I get some of this from our friend Mark Jaffe, who used to work for California Policy Center, enters a full disclosure, but now works for Cato. And his story, are taxes really lower in California than in Texas? He says basically, no. The property tax rate is higher in Texas, he concedes, but home costs are much lower. They are much closer to the number that Wallet Hub used of $244,000. There it is. as a median home price, $244,000. Texas's is $257,000. So in the ballpark. California's median home price at the same time, Jaffe points out, $708,936. So, yeah, what, two times the median that WalletHub used in its analysis. So there's that problem in the formula.
It's just on its face so stupid.
And I would just...
But that's the thing. It doesn't bother me. It just doesn't. We talked about this once before. There was some other study brought up. It wasn't with Scott Wiener about like whether or not the apples-to-apples tax burden was higher in Texas than California. A marginal rate of zero versus a marginal rate of 13. Sales tax differences, and you throw in the property tax differential and income and business income tax. There's so many things that are wrong with this. It's just not even funny. But at the end of the day, if Scott Wiener thinks everything's fine in San Francisco, then fine.
Yes.
That's all right.
This seems to be what he's saying.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so we only have time perhaps for one more story out of the catalog I sent you.
I will say I agree with Scott Wiener on one thing, though.
Please.
I think more people with monkeypox are comfortable in California than Texas. I do. I don't believe they want to go to Texas.
I'm almost certain you're right. Here's the headline from the LA Times story that I want to talk about from just late last week. Unions and environmentalists push for California referendum reform. The lead is from Taryn Luna. California's influential labor unions, government watchdogs, and environmental advocates repeatedly accuse corporations of lying to voters in campaigns to reverse state laws and to thwart the progressive Democratic agenda at the state capitol. She's right. That is what goes on. Unions and environmentalists do not like the referendum. They don't like it. They don't like referendum and initiative. They hate it. Here's their analysis, as cited by Taryn Luna, of
and they also hate when people lie.
They don't like they don't like liars, which is your first red flag here in the story. SEIU tells Taryn Luna and other proponents of this new bill. So there's a new bill that would make it more difficult to file a referendum or an initiative in California. And this all goes back to a 1911 state initiative, series of state initiatives, propositions, I want to say four, which was woman suffrage. Hooray. I like that. Proposition 7 and 8, recall referendum. That is to recall a politician or to get the citizens an opportunity to speak out. And this was all aimed. Here's the history. All of those propositions, 1911, under Hiram Johnson, our Republican governor, helped push this. And so, you know who else did? Who else pushed this? The Republican Party. Who hated it? The Democrats. Who else hated it? The unions hated the 1911 progressive agenda. They did not like it. They were absolutely behind one group controlling the state legislature, not government unions, not unions in general. It was Southern Pacific Railroad. I won't go into the deep history. This could be another John Sutter moment where we talk about the deep history of how railroads, and especially Southern Pacific, came to really control the state legislature in the late 19th century and early 20th centuries. It was disgusting. It was pretty bad. I think by any from any perspective, it was terrible. But here's what SEIU tells Taryn Luna, rather, and what she reports without question. They say it's necessary, SEIU and the other proponents, they say it's necessary to realign California's referendum system with its founding objective from 1911, to provide a mechanism through direct democracy for voters to counter the influence corporations held over state government. No, it was not. It was aimed at one insider group. Why did Republicans hate the Southern Pacific Railroad? Was because they hate business and corporations? They wanted to tame their influence? Hell no. Republicans, including our governor, Hiram Johnson, wanted the referendum because the railroad, a railroad, had become a parasite. It controlled the body politic. Mm. You know who controls the body politic today? Mm. Government unions, environmentalists. They're the parasites. And so the referendum is exactly on point for their abuse of this system. Exactly on point. To pretend that this was somehow some anti-business progressive era thing. No. Not at all. It takes a very specific and purposeful lie or a willful ignorance of the campaign surrounding the 1911 passage of these things by Californians. They went after incumbents, and it was led by Republicans with a capital R. and supported and opposed by Democrats and the Southern Pacific Railroad. So railroads, not so critical today. So if you really want to look at this and say we want to take it back to its original intention, mission accomplished. They got rid of the Southern Pacific Railroad. That was the goal, was to make sure that that organization and no other organization could ever again take control of the state. So now that they have control of the state, the government unions are all about eliminating this terrible, terrible thing that has been contorted by corporations. BS. I will say no more.
Well, they want to make it a requirement that when you're gathering signatures, you have to say the three biggest donors to the cause.
Yeah.
And I have always gotten a kick out of this. Both sides, by the way, the pro-corporate anti-union people and the anti-corporate pro-union people, there's a very selective desire for transparency.
That's right, yeah.
I'm all for corporations putting money into politics if mm-hmm. they're free people and if whatever. But the fact of the matter is the SEIU most certainly does not want the CTA to have to say, yeah, we're the biggest donor for this given issue.
That's right.
Or in opposition.
That's right.
So, like, if we put something on in favor of school choice, who will be the biggest funder opposed to it?
Oh, the CTA,
the
California
Teachers
Association.
So then, do they want that mandatory?
They're not excited about. But I will say, there's this difference. There was wide.
And why stop at the signature gathering? Let's do it at the vote.
Yeah, I like that.
Like, well, you can't vote unless you know who the three biggest funders were on each side.
Or we know that you are the voter you say you are, a kind of voter integrity. Pass. All right. So there's so much more to talk about here, David, but you get to run. I get to run. I'm so sorry that I took up all of our time talking about the Aztecs, but it was fun.
And I think that we did our listeners a real service.
That's all the time we have today. You can always find this podcast on the National Review website, but it would be easier for you and better for us if you subscribe. Thanks for all of you who do. And rate and review the show. You know what? Seriously, this really helps. If you love this show or even just like it mildly, rate and review the show. That raises our profile among all other podcast listeners out there in the world. Yeah, we're talking to you, Uganda, Thailand, Cambodia, Korea, Vietnam. Huge in Vietnam. So let's see. Yeah, on behalf of my friend and co-host Dave Bonson, we give thanks as ever to session producers Lucas Klaus, Brian Tong, and Glenn Hall, our researchers at California Policy Center, and all of our friends at National Review, especially National Review podcast producer Sarah Schutte. Thank you, Sarah. Thanks also to Metalachi, a CLA-based mariachi metal band, for our music. Don't listen to those lyrics too closely, am I right? You listen to the whole song, and then I want you to email me and tell me what the song is about. I'm not proud of it. That's why we cut it where we do. La revolución continúa la semana próxima.